You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here's your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
Well, good morning, everybody. I am Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Karen Chapman from Gardnerville, Nevada, and you are listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for October 14th, episode 3796. Good morning, Horse World!
When your start time's on Saturday and your finish time's on Sunday, and it doesn't get much better than best conditioned, and completing the challenge is the challenge, you're an endurance rider.
Well, welcome back to this Endurance Day. We do the second Tuesday of every month with Karen. Hey, Karen, what's coming up on today's show?
Well, today we're going to be talking about how to prepare your horse for camping. And we're going to be talking about rain gear and also the Virginia City 100.
Well, it sounds like a fun show. Have you been riding?
I have been riding. I did a 50 last month at the Riders of the Lost Sierra Ride, which is sort of appropriately named because everybody got lost. We all did get found again and finished. Uh-oh. So it turned out good.
You didn't get penalized because everybody got lost?
No, we just ended up doing 62 miles. So
added 12,
I was thinking, you know, I probably should have gone and done the Virginia City 100 instead. It would have been less stressful, but that's another story. So that ride went overall really well. The horse finished looking fantastic. He like had all A's, and so I was real pleased with that. My feet are feeling really wonderful after going to physical therapy, so I'm not experiencing that much really bad nerve pain
anymore.
Good
news.
Yeah, so I've done like the last 350s now, and it's just so much better. I don't think my feet have felt this good in like 10 years. So
yay. You can't go on. We have to go back to how everybody got lost. You can't just let it in. We all got lost. Just not enough ribbons on the course?
Yeah, there just weren't enough ribbons, or there weren't any. And okay, so it was like, you know, Groundhog's Day, the movie.
Yeah.
We're like, we've been here before.
When did you realize that things weren't going well?
When other riders were coming back and everybody was looking at their GPSs and their watches and their phones, and nobody really knew where to go. So I had the ride manager on speed dial. And
unfortunately, you had reception.
And I did have reception, fortunately. So she was out there running around on the quad trying to fix everything and getting everybody rerouted. Yeah, I know. It's just one of those things that can happen.
So that they give everybody a participation award instead of first, second, and third?
No, we had the placings because everybody got back on the trail. It's just that we did extra.
Well, there you go.
Because we were going round and round on a loop that we should have turned off on at one important intersection. And then, you know, once you come back around the second time, you're kind of looking at it going, weren't we here before?
Yeah, didn't I see that tree before?
Oops. So yes, so that inspired me to go, and I got a new Garmin. My health insurance has a deal, and a lot of insurance companies do, so you guys listening might want to check into this, where they have a deal worked out with Garmin for giving you 20% off.
Oh, wow. So it is hard to find discounts on Garmins.
It is, especially the newer ones, because they don't discount them for a certain period of time.
Like 10 years.
So it seems like it.
Yeah. So did you get the new one we talked about?
No, I got a Venue, which, I mean, it's crazy all the stuff it does. I mean, it measures all sorts of things. And then it makes you feel really inadequate because it tells you your body battery is low and that you're not getting enough sleep.
Yeah, no kidding. I got up at 3 a.m. to do this ride.
Exactly. You know, and now I've got 3 old dogs that are all 13, 15, 16. And so they're up at by 4 every morning, you know, moving around and making noise. And so, yeah, my sleep score is something I know now. I know I need to work on that for sure. I need to go to an endurance ride so I can sleep, you know.
How is it on navigation?
Well, so far, so good. I've just been recording activities. This next coming weekend, I'm going to be doing a 50 up in Reno, and they'll send us the track sometimes during the week, and I'm going to download them and put them on the watch and on my phone and see how it goes. So I'll be able to report back next week.
What were you using before?
Well, I was using my cell phone. The problem when you use your cell phone is if you're out there for a long day, you run the risk of running out of battery, or you have to carry an extra battery pack.
Carry a brick.
You know it. Yeah. Right. So this is kind of nice because this watch has several days of battery to it and it should last.
Have you found that to be
day.
True? They always advertise that, but is it really true?
Yes. Yes. It's lasting me for days, even though it's measuring all my health measurements and my sleep and my heart rate and also recording all of my activities. You know what? The other cool thing it has as a feature is I just push a button and it has a flashlight and I can change the flashlight from white to red. And so I tried it out last night with the horses out there in the dark and it actually works really well.
Yeah, so what kind of Garmin did you get?
It's a Venue X1.
Okay. I'll put a link to it in the show notes. I'm taking a look here and seeing what it runs right now on Amazon. It is currently $799, plus if you can get a discount.
Right. Yeah, the 20% off was a nice big help.
Yeah, and it's got good ratings.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Good. Well, part of why I bought it is you see that nice screen.
Yeah, the face is big.
It's nice, but it's thin. It's thinner than like my Galaxy Watch was, so I don't even notice it.
Oh, good. Yeah, it does say thin and lightweight. That's one of the first things it advertises.
Yeah, so.
And I assume it's like the others. You know, there's a learning curve because it does so much that you have to figure it out. And you want to do that before your ride.
Exactly. Yeah. So, yes, I've been playing with it for the last couple of weeks and learning how everything works. And, you know, it's very responsive and easy to see, even in bright daylight. So
that is an important thing because some of them are hard to see.
Oh, my gosh. I've had other Garmins in the past and it's, you know, you got to go somewhere and get, like, I've had to get in the back seat of my truck sometimes in order to see things to, you know, because some of these screens, they want to do the adaptive brightness or some dumb thing on you. And then next thing you know, you can't see it in the daylight.
It's true. It's true with some phones too. So this is not a paid commercial, by the way, but I'd be interested to hear how to use it on a ride. It does say 16 hours in GPS mode. So, you know, right. You should be fine for almost any ride.
Mm-hmm.
Yay. Okay. Well, we'll do a review next month and find out how it's going. So you're going up to Red Rock this weekend?
Uh-huh. Yep.
How's that one? Is that a up and downy?
Yes. It's all a lot of mountains and a lot of sand. It's got good footing, but it does have quite a significant amount of climbing typically. And the weather can be anything. Like this week, we're getting snow in the Sierras. So it just depends on if the storm hits that far north where the ride is or if it goes a little further south. But I've done that ride in the snow, in the rain, and in perfect weather. So you just go prepared for everything.
Is that the one that's down near Vegas?
No. Opposite. Okay. It's north of Reno.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, so it's in the northern part of the state. I mean, Nevada's full of red rocks, so that's why I had to clarify that.
That is, there's red rock down in Vegas.
Yeah. We hiked that, so that's what I was like, which one is it? Well, terrific. Well, good luck this weekend, and we'll look forward to a report on your new Garmin watch next month. Well, the Arabian Horse Association is a proud sponsor of the Endurance Rider podcast. The Arabian Horse was born in the desert, built for endurance, and proven on the trail. These horses excel from endurance to the show ring and, of course, as trail partners. Stop admiring them from afar. Join the community that defines equine excellence. The AHA provides resources, events, and competition opportunities for every level of owner and enthusiast. Find your legendary partner and elevate your horsemanship. Learn more and get connected at arabianhorses.org. That's arabianhorses.org. So what are we talking about for your endurance tip this time?
Well, today we are going to be talking about a topic close to home for me because I am getting my young horse Cowboy ready to go camping overnight away from home. So I'm going to talk about preparing a horse for camping, which includes acclimating them to the camp setup and the routines, getting them feeling comfortable in their environment.
And this is so difficult because some horses are so okay with this and some are not.
Oh, and you just never know what your camp is going to be like. You know, you're going to add in all this extra stimulation of other horses and other riders, you know, maybe some vehicles, you know, a lot of the rides people are using motorcycles or quads or side-by-sides for marking the trail. And, you know, they're hauling water in these big trucks and filling up troughs with these giant hoses. And, you know, there's people and dogs. And so there's all sorts
parties
of stimulation. things that get added in addition to whatever you can prepare for at home.
All right, well, let's talk about what's the best way to do this.
Okay, so first of all, you want to introduce your camping setup and equipment at home. So whether you're going to be using a highline, a portable corral, a trailer tie, or just tied to your trailer, you want to start getting to do that at home. And when you're using that and getting it set up, you also want to start letting your horse get used to other items around them. Things like maybe tarps, buckets, hay bags. If you have a cart or wagon, you know, put stuff in it and pull it around them. Just let them get used to associating that, oh, this is all just normal. And add exposure over days or weeks so that they get used to stuff. You know, you come around a corner and you're carrying a hay bag or something and it makes a sound and it startles them. So the more they get exposed to that stuff, the better.
Rent some coyotes to come over and howl at night.
Or some cows to run through camp.
Yeah.
Like that happens.
Some sheep. Get some sheep.
Right. And in my case, I train my horses to use a collar. So they've spent quite a bit of time being tied and led and being on a collar and learning not to pull and learning its limitations, you know, so I've been putting Cowboy on the trailer by himself and taking Jovi off the property. Because my third horse is away at a trainer. And let me tell you what, when you have three horses and you take one out, it's not a problem because the ones left have a buddy. But if you have only two horses and you take one out, now that one left is home alone. And it's a whole different thing for them mentally. So I've been gradually letting Cowboy get used to being left home alone and now being left tied on the high tie with food and water. I also let him be on it last night for a couple hours in the dark. I went in there with my flashlight and my headlamp on. So he's getting used to the shadows and the movement of light and maybe me coming around a corner. And just letting him get used to, you know, those kinds of things happening. So I started out initially with doing, you know, maybe 5 or 10 minutes, you know, staying in sight and watching, you know, how the horses react when they're left tied. And then slowly increasing that amount of time and just making sure that they're comfortable and building up to maybe half an hour to an hour. And then, you know, keep going and adding longer increments to it.
Do you practice at home on all-nighter before you go?
I've only really done a couple of hours at night so far. And then during the day, sometimes if I'm out there doing barn chores and a bunch of stuff, I will leave, one or more horses on their high ties so that they are used to being on them for extended periods and learning, like I said, the limitations of it. And also they're also at the same time learning to get comfortable eating out of a hay bag and drinking out of the bucket. You know, once you get to that point, then you can also start by going out and doing just short little trips, like trailer to a local arena or fairgrounds or trailhead, and letting the horse spend some time there where there's more stuff, more stimulation and more things going on. And then the horses over time get more confident and more comfortable with the process. And then it is like their home away from home, and they'll get comfortable with it. At one ride, I remember years ago, I had Chief and Bo, and I was out riding on Bo. And when I came back, someone said, I tied Chief up. He got loose and he was running circles around your rig. So he didn't run away and leave because he was so familiar that was like his home away from home, and he was comfortable with it. So the more stuff you can do to desensitize your horse, to handling all the stuff that should become familiar, then when you add in the extra stimulation, hopefully it's something they're going to be able to, deal with mentally without, pulling back or, running through something or, having a problem.
Or becoming that inevitable loose horse at the show.
Exactly.
It's always one. Every driving show we would go to, there would always be one. And it was always bad if they were still hooked up to the cart.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I bet it was.
Yeah, that's never good.
Yeah. Right.
Well, so, and I assume then you got to do the same thing day and night. You got to practice both.
Right. Just because, to a horse, things are different at night.
Headlamps,
there's shadows
and all that stuff.
Yeah. The headlamps. I try to use a red light headlamp because that doesn't tend to cause a problem with their vision as much as a bright white light might do.
That doesn't mean other people in the camp.
Yeah. Yeah, you could be in a camp, and rigs are still coming in after dark this time of year.
Yep.
And they might shine the headlights right into your horse. And so that might be, something new that you want them to be able to handle. The other thing you can utilize as a tip is using another experienced horse and pairing that together with your horse, especially the first time or two, so that they can learn from the more experienced horse.
Okay. Very good. Anything else on that one?
I think I got it all covered.
Patience and time.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's go to Kristen at the Distance Depot. And today we're going to be talking about something that everybody's going to need very shortly because we're coming into rainy season in some places, and that's rain gear.
Well, next up, we have Kristen from the Distance Depot joining us. Today we're going to be talking about some of the new rain gear that the Distance Depot has. Perfect timing. Welcome, Kristen.
Well, thanks for having me. We do have some great waterproof rain gear. The two brands that we offer are Muddy Creek, and we also have the Outback. It's a Packaroo Duster, which is a long, lightweight, waterproof raincoat. And the super cool thing about it, it folds up into itself into a backpack.
We had that. We had that for the longest time, and I love that thing. So
it is cool. Yeah. And it's not, this big, huge raincoat flopping around. You just fold it up into itself in a pocket, and just you can wear it like a backpack or carry it around, put it on your saddle. It's pretty cool feature of that. But it has nice leg straps and pockets, snap-covered storm flap, adjustable drawstring waist, a two-way zipper, and they're all seam sealed and windproof and waterproof and breathable. So that makes them super nice.
And you'll look like a cool cowboy out of the 1880s. Right. So that
that's right. And not like those old heavy wax dusters right. either, because those were so heavy.
They were heavy.
They get sticky and they're just really gross.
And we lived in Florida. Ours molded. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So, and the Muddy Creek, their long coat is huge. So the Outback Packaroo would be a raincoat you could wear around doing barn chores and such. The Muddy Creek is more for riding when you're in the saddle. It's very big, so it covers your entire saddle. In fact, covers your horse's rump. So a lot of people get it and think it's too big, but the idea is for it to cover everything, including the back of your horse. The water isn't getting down into the back of your saddle for you to sit on and get soaked.
And it's part raincoat and part quarter sheet. You don't need a quarter sheet when you have this on.
Exactly. New item that we do have is the Muddy Creek Riding Rain Skirt. This is very cool, elastic waistband and a Velcro closure around you. And again, does the same sort of thing, only it's a big skirt. So it will cover your entire saddle, your legs. It has nice wide leg straps. So super cool to keep you dry and waterproof while riding.
And those and the Muddy Creek items are all waterproof, right?
They are.
Yeah.
Yep.
So whether you're looking for a short raincoat, a long coat, or a coat that acts also as a quarter sheet, you can find it all at thedistancedepot.com. That's thedistancedepot.com. Thanks a bunch, Kristen. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Well, last month, our Young Riders U.S. team went over to Romania and competed in the Endurance World Championship for juniors and young riders. And they had really good results. They worked so hard for at least the previous couple of years to get prepared and qualified. And they went over and they did really well. They finished seventh.
Oh, wow.
Overall.
Good. How many finished? Is there four on the team?
Uh-huh, yes. And let's see. I believe we started five riders and four finished.
Oh, wow. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Yay. Well, that's pretty good, actually. And are those hundreds or 50s?
It was a 75.
Okay. Very good. And, and Heather Reynolds was the chef to keep, right?
Yes, she was.
Well, that's exciting for them, too, to get
Perfect.
To hang out with her, right?
Uh-huh.
So that's kind of exciting. Well, congratulations to all of them, and you'll be seeing them at Tevis soon. Be there in no time.
Well, I think they already have, some of them I know have done Tevis already.
Oh, yay. Good.
Yes.
All right. Very good. And then we also, I saw some of the controversy going on the Facebook pages about the annual convention going this year to virtual. So why did they do that?
Well, we had the executive director and the editor of Endurance News both retired. So the office staff is sort of in a state of transition right now.
And there's a lot of work to planning an in-person conference. There really is. It's a ton of work.
I'm sure it is completely. So they're working on replacing some of the staff. I know some of that's already been, in the works, in the process. But in the meantime, I think they realized that the attendance was low last year's conference, or how, depending how you look at it. The year ends on November 30th and starts December 1st. So then usually it's like 3 months later that we have our annual convention. And so for 2026, it's going to be February 28th and March 1st. But last year when we had it, I think attendance was down. So I think for now they're going to try this virtual convention. This has, some pros and some cons to it. People will be able to attend from anywhere. And
yeah, because
so
it's
that
expensive
might be,
to go to a convention. It's not cheap.
Exactly. So they'll be able to attend the seminars, and I'm sure there's going to be other events and things. They're still working all that out. And I know in the future, we'll be able to get somebody on from AARC to tell us more details about what the plans are and how this is all going to work. So, we'll see how it goes. I know people are kind of disappointed that they don't get to go to a convention every year, because it's nice to get to go and see all your friends and go to the awards banquets and attend the classes and seminars in person, because they always offer a lot of nice educational stuff.
Oh, and let's not forget the party's still 3 a.m. Let's not forget this.
Yes, then there's the dances and the parties and...
The real reason we all go to conventions.
There you go. Yeah.
You know, I could argue this in both sides in court. Obviously, the getting together is important. And, you know, when I go to the conventions for podcasting, it's the same way. You know, I like getting together with my friends. That's the reason I go, right? Uh-huh. But it is expensive, too. You know, we get a lot of horse shows that ask us to come out and actually do shows from their horse show. And I tell them, you know, every time I leave the house to go somewhere, it's $1,500. By the time you add everything up, it's at least $1,500. And for some conventions, depending on where they are, it's more than that. And, you know, this year's a tough year anyway. So if you were going to pick one year to have to do this, this is probably a good year, as it turns out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, with everything the way it is. But then I can argue both sides. You know, this way it allows anybody to go. That, you know, people that normally wouldn't go because they can't spend the money on it. They can't or don't want to, you know, they can go, right? So there is positive negatives here. I could do both in court. I could be defense or prosecution on this one.
So. Right. You know, and maybe we can draw some people in from other disciplines to attend the seminars, because they do always have a lot of good educational speakers on topics that are really relevant to all horse owners and all disciplines.
That's true. And, you know, the other thing, too, is it's very expensive. People don't realize how expensive it is. I help with the one conference down here, PodFest. It's in Orlando, one of the hotels in Orlando. You pay for every little thing. The water bottles that are in every meeting room cost $50 to $100 a day. You know, if you put a coffee station up, it's hundreds of dollars a day. So every little thing you do is very expensive. It is very expensive to run a conference, no matter what city you do it in. So, mm-hmm. You know, I get that. And the AERC is going to save a lot of money by doing it this way, because you tend to do it in person and then want to offer, you know, something out to the people at home, too. So you're paying for both. I don't know. I think it's, you know, it is expensive. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of effort on the organizer's part. And a lot of times, I don't know how big the ARC office is. Not that big, right? So they only have a couple of people that are working on it, you know, and it does add up in time and money, for sure.
It sure does.
You don't get all that back. You tend to lose money on these things, too. Because if you really charged what needed to be charged for people to come for the fee, they wouldn't come.
Right.
So you're not making money on these either.
Right. And it's expensive for the vendors to come too. So we've had a decrease in the number of vendors over the years compared to what it used to be.
Yeah. And what you tend to rely on when you're doing conferences like this, I know for the ones I work on, is your sponsors have to cover the costs, or you really lose money. You're really relying on your sponsors, or because the fees for, you know, the entry fees are not enough. They need that sponsor money. And, you know, I don't know if it's better or worse for like a title sponsor to do it online, because you have more people watching, right? And you still get your commercials in and things. They don't get to see the products. I don't know. I think, you know, I could argue both sides of that in court, too.
We'll just see. You know, hopefully we get some good, strong, you know, marketing and social media exposure going so that we can get the word out, you know, because we can get people coming and attending online from all over the world.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Well, we'll see how it goes, and we'll report in after. But yeah, it would be nice to get somebody on ahead of time, because it's going to be a new, for some people attending conference like this online. So maybe we can, as they get closer and have the details ironed out, we can go over some details on how to connect and all that stuff. All right, good. Well, get ready for the fall with Chewy, from hoof boots and saddlebags for golden hour adventures to coolers and clippers. You know, it's getting... We actually clipped my pony yesterday because his hair was so freaking long for Florida already. So you'll find everything your horse needs this season. Support their health through pasture changes with vitamin E and ration balancers, or care for metabolic horses with targeted supplements, prescriptions, and even ice boots to soothe the soreness. And if your horse is feeling a little too fresh in the fall air, calming supplements are just a click away. With trusted brands you know and fast free shipping on orders over $49, Chewy makes it easy to keep your horse comfortable and cared for. For seasonal must-haves, for brands you trust, and for fast delivery, there's Chewy. Shop at chewy.com/equine. That's chewy.com/equine. All right, let's get to our guest.
And our next guest this morning is Amrita O'Leary, who is an endurance rider in the West region. She also just placed first in the Virginia City 100 on her horse WMA Poet. She's got 2,955 miles and has been riding endurance in the West region since 2017. Well, good morning, Amrita. Thank you for joining us. I'm going to start right away with our first question for you. I know you've been riding since 2017. What first got you into endurance and how did you get started?
Well, I'm ER nurse, and while I was in nursing school, I ran into one of my teachers was Sue Smythe, who is a big ride and tie person. And if you knew Sue, she asks every single person she knows that looks like an athlete or a horse person if they want to do ride and ties. So she actually got me into ride and ties. And when I got my own horse, I decided it was a young horse that I should probably do some endurance with him. And I just kind of fell in love with the sport.
So you've been doing this for 8 years now. What's your favorite ride or big lesson that's helped you build up for these tougher ones like Virginia City?
Well, I'd probably say my three first attempts at Tevis, failed attempts. I made it to Forest Hill, and looking back, I probably learned more from those attempts than I have from any other successful ride, because you learn how to manage the issues that are going to come up on a longer ride, and there's always some kind of issue that comes up, it seems like. So probably, yeah, my failures, not that they're failures, but yeah, just learning how to manage those things that come up, like saddle fit and electrolytes and all the training beforehand that goes into it.
What was one of those things, if you're going to advise a newbie, what was one of those things you learned at Tevis that was your biggest aha light bulb moment?
To pace your horse, to hold them back way more than you'd think you need to on 100 until you really got them down. You know, just Melissa Montgomery is one of my friends, and she always, you know, told me don't go out fast, you know, ride that first 25 like it's a leisurely ride, and then the second one is through the canyons, and you have to, you know, manage your horse, get off and walk or run those canyons if you can, and then if you still have horse after Forest Hill, then you let them go. So probably just in all rides, just really pacing your horse and not getting caught up in the excitement of going as fast as your horse wants to.
It's a good metaphor for life too, actually.
Yeah, probably.
Karen?
Hey, tell us about your horse, WMA Poet.
Yes, WMA Poet is the WMA part. If you are familiar with racing in Texas, they race Arabs in Texas, and WMA is the Welcome Arabians, and that's where Poet started his career. He was on the track. He raced. He made some money, but he wasn't spectacular. But when I met him, I just fell head over heels for him. I come from hunter jumpers, and he has that thoroughbreddy, tall, big, he's 16 hands, and he's got huge feet and big cannon bones, and it's exactly what I was looking for. So,
well, now we know why you started the race fast. That's what he was used to. Like, I'm going.
Yes, he is a powerhouse. I started him slow. He kept him slow for the first 2 or 3 years. I got him when he was 5. He had raced and then had a year off, and then I got him and I just started him real slow and held him back until he was ready to, he showed me he was ready to take care of himself 100% of the time. And now I'm just having fun letting him go.
So, does he still get hyped up with all the other horses at the beginning of the race though? Does that hype him up?
Absolutely not.
Oh, good.
He did in the beginning. He was a nutcake in the in the first few rides. He was very exciting to ride, but that's why you go slow when you have one of those types of horses. You got to let them get their brain kind of settled, you know. But no, he walked around downtown Virginia City with all the lights and the cars, and I have some videos that I took, put him on the, well, you guys had some videos, or the ride had some videos as well. He's very calm at the start of a ride, which always helps me stay settled and calm.
You know, right. We talked about, yeah. Actually, the other day we talked about thoroughbreds, and one of the things about thoroughbreds when you get them, yeah, they're not, you know, they're trained to go one direction, and they're sort of trained, right? But, and you know that, you used to work with them. But the one yes. thing that thoroughbreds do is they have exposure, one, to traveling, because they're going to different racetracks. The ones that have right. gone to different racetracks, they know trailering, and they also know about distractions and people and clapping, and, you know, they've been desensitized to a lot of stuff. So that they is one have. Thing they have going, the racehorses have going for them, right?
Absolutely. And so I have Poet, and then this spring I bought his brother. And Poet was raced on the track. He was exposed to everything very early. And his brother wasn't. His brother was sent to Canada and lived a rural life in the mountains. And it is a big difference between the two. I think the exposure early on really does help them, you know, just take everything in and process it a little bit easier.
So how did you and Poet get ready for this year's Virginia City?
Well, I decided I'm very goal-oriented. I was a professional cyclist for 10 years. So I always have a goal for every year. And I think that it's really important in any sport to have a goal that you can both measure. So, okay, I met that goal, or you didn't. So my goal this year was Triple Crown. It wasn't to win Virginia City. Just ended up that way. So in getting ready, for Triple Crown, you do a 50 early on in the year. And then mid-year, you do 75 at NASCAR. And then you do the 100. So that alone kind of builds your horse up to do it. I also did some other 50s leading up to the 100. And I would do a real hard ride. And then the next day, I would still get them out, even if I wasn't at a race, and do some back-to-backs. Jay Marrow always talks about, oh, it's really important to do back-to-back rides so your horses, you know, get used to recovering, and then they still have to go out again. So that was kind of my philosophy, is just to keep them moving.
Did you find he got better on the second day when you did that?
Absolutely. Yeah. Poet is really takes care of himself. So he eats and he drinks and all of that. So the next day he would typically have eaten everything in sight and be ready to go the next day.
Okay, now let's just mention the historic Virginia City 100 and tell us how the ride went and tell us what the hardest spots were for you.
I loved starting in downtown in the morning. It was really special just to be in that little gold rush town or silver town. I don't know what it is, but just being in that environment was really fun. I had never done Virginia City before, so it was the first for me. And as far as the hardest part, it was probably on the second loop. The first loop went by just really fast and easy. That second loop was a long one, and I was mostly alone for most of the entire loop. We did catch Peggy probably, I don't know, halfway through, but I was getting off and walking down all the hills because that's kind of my thing. It helps me, and I think it helps Poet. And yeah, that second loop was just really long, but that was probably the hardest part mentally.
What did you think of the rocks?
There was a lot of rocks. Somebody sent me a message and said, just remember, anything under 5 inches is just sand. And I would have to agree, just like you had to trot over anything you could to get through that ride. You know, it was just rocks on top of rocks, but still beautiful, beautiful, beautiful ride.
And you finished in first in 15 hours and 12 minutes. Did that seem really long to you compared to, say, doing Tevis?
It felt like I was never rushed. I felt like I stopped and let him eat plenty. And I felt like I had a lot more horse that I could have asked for if I needed it. But when I did NASCAR I rode with Heather Reynolds, And like I said, my goal was to do the Triple Crown, to win Triple Crown. And she said, you know, Virginia City is real hard on your horse. It can be. So just go as fast as you need to. Don't go any faster because you don't want to hurt your horse. And that's kind of what I did. I knew that on that last loop, it was going to be flat and easy and I'd be able to catch up with Peg, even if she got a, you know, a lead in front of me. And that Poet, I never got into third gear. I mean, he's like a diesel truck. He just is a powerhouse, but I never had to let him go really at all that the whole day. So
tell us, do you have any advice if there was somebody wanting to try endurance for their first time or get involved in doing 100 miles? What would be your advice for like training and horse care and staying motivated?
I would say find somebody that's respected in the sport to mentor you, somebody who takes care of their horses and they have record that shows that they have, you know, decade type horses, not horses that are just going out and winning. And then soak up all the knowledge from them as you can, because, you know, there is a lot of people in our sport that have just so much knowledge to give. I know that for me, Melissa Montgomery and Jay Marrow and riding with people and soaking up all the information you can get from those who have done it successfully is probably the most important thing I could recommend.
So what's next for you and Poet?
Well, next year I'm going to aim for Tevis again. I took this year off because of the Triple Crown. NASTAR was just a little too close to Tevis for Poet to do both. And so that's going to be my goal, to see how well we can do at Tevis next year. And then I might try the Triple Crown with my new guy, his brother, if he does well early on 100 and early next year.
Well, thank you so much for joining us and congratulations again on the Triple Crown in Virginia City.
And thank you so much.
I hope to see you at a ride again soon.
Okay. Thank you guys so much for having me.
And of course, there are rides all over the country still going on. Check the AERC online ride calendar for rides in your area. Go to AERC.org. And also be sure to check out the clinic pages as there are several endurance clinics popping up all over. I know pretty soon all the endurance riders are going to be moving either to Southern California or to my neighborhood, literally right here where I live.
Where they winter over.
Exactly. Because I live in a neighborhood that buffers the forest where everybody trains. So Gothy Forest is where everybody trains and where like the Reynolds train and all the endurance riders come. And they live, a lot of them live in my neighborhood here. We have an equestrian neighborhood. They're either drivers, carriage drivers, or endurance riders all descend on us over the winter. And I see them going by our house all the time. So, well, yes.
Have you ever run across an endurance rider on the trail there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're all the time out there. Yeah.
Are there any that you know, that you remember interviewing?
Well, see, you know, the problem with you and I is we don't see them. So if I'm passing them, I don't know what they look like. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
Yeah, because we do audio and we don't have video. So, if we did a video podcast, I'd recognize them. But for the most part, I don't. Because... Yeah. Now, the Reynolds are a different story because, you know, we do see them around occasionally.
You have met them.
Yeah.
Right?
We see them at shows here and stuff. But they're the only ones I would really know seeing them.
Yeah. At the last ride, we were sitting having dinner and a lady sitting next to me recognized my voice. She's been listening to the show for years.
There you go.
So that keeps happening to me.
When you have distinctive voices like you and I have, I always hated my voice, but people recognize it. They recognize
it. They do. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's better to have a distinctive, I always wanted the deep, you know, voice. Radio voice, but I guess it's better to have just the squeaky voice. So you and I qualify in that category, squeaky voices. Well, thank you everybody for listening. We really appreciate it. You can find the Endurance Rider podcast separately from Horses in the Morning. Just search for Endurance Rider on your podcast player, and that only has the endurance episodes on it. So you can go back and listen for years and years and years and years. Karen's been doing this a very long time. So also, Karen, where can they find you?
You can find me at my name, KarenChatton.com.
And good luck this weekend on your 50, and we'll look forward to hearing whether you get lost with your new toy.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. Horsesinthemorning.com is where you can find. And we're here 5 days a week. Tomorrow, I will have a special guest host, Ashley, who is now the director of podcasting here at the network. She took over from me. She'll be filling in for Jamie, who's still off doing her clinic. And then later on in the week, on Thursday, we have the Equine Affair episode. That's right. The show Equine Affair does an episode. And we're coming up, actually, on the Equine Affair is a month away. In Massachusetts. So I'm sure she has exciting things planned for that. And then on Friday, I have a brand new fill-in co-host who's doing it for the first time. And so we'll see how that goes. So thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll appreciate it. And we'll talk to you again next month.